Podcast. Thank you for having me, Joe.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. I am Joe Poznanski, and with me is Michael Schur. Michael, welcome.
Joe, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. That was, you know what that was? That was a refreshed sounding.
That was I'm back from vacation.
I've
had a little R&R, saw some baseball games, and I'm all ready to go with a new podcast.
you took it too far. You took it too far there at the end.
You were buying it until I said that I was ready to go for a new podcast. Yeah, that was a mistake on my part.
That was a bit of a mistake. Well, we have so much to go over because of your vacation, which, by the way, was like, you're like zealot. You were like everywhere you needed to be on this vacation.
I really was. That's exactly right. I was Forrest Gump. I was baseball Forrest Gump. So I have family in Boston. I went to see my little sister Stephanie had a baby. Who's now a while ago now. We had never met her. My kids had never met their cousin. So we went to meet her, baby Claire. While we were there, we decided to go to a Red Sox game. So I took my two sisters and my son to a Red Sox game, and we happened to see what I believe is the game of the year so
far.
Game
of the year, I think it is.
Yeah, at Fenway Park on Tuesday night, it was the Indians, the 12-10 game, the Christian Vasquez walk-off homer. Going in, you're thinking, okay, Chris Sale is pitching. I'm going to see Chris Sale. We were so happy. My son and I were so happy we got to see Chris Sale pitch. He immediately gives up 5 runs and ended up giving up 7 in 4 innings or something. But the Indians went up 5-0. The Sox came back and tied it with 5 in the second. Then the Indians went up again. Like Brandon Guyer homered off Chris Sale. Just weird things were happening. Edwin Nunez, who is like the second coming for Red Sox fans right now.
Greatest. Oh my God.
Yeah, such a good player, playing at like every position and just raking the ball off the monster. He hits a 3-run double slash sort of triple where he heads up base running, moves to third on a throw home. They go up 9-7. Then you're like, okay, 9-7 in the eighth. Here we go. Shutdown time. Addison Reed in his first game with the Red Sox comes in, gives up a solo homer to the first guy he faces in a Red Sox uniform. Still, it doesn't matter. Who cares? 9-8, you've got Craig Kimbrell. Craig Kimbrell comes into the ninth. It goes to 0-2 on Francisco Lindor with two of the craziest breaking pitches you've ever seen, where Lindor, a wonderful hitter, looks foolish. And then Kimbrell decides to throw him a fastball, and Lindor just flicks it over the monster to tie the game. Then it's like walk, walk, single, wild pitch. They go down 10-9. And then in the bottom of the ninth inning, an infield single by Rafael Devers, who is the second coming for Red Sox fans right now after Nunez, beats out an infield single. And then I think there's a walk, and then Vasquez. Not a walk. The craziest of crazy things is Mitch Moreland strikes out, but the ball gets past the Indians catcher, and he actually makes it to first, a thing that never happens. That happens a lot in my 9-year-old son's youth league games, but never happens in the majors. So it's first and second, two outs. Then they move to second and third on, I think, another wild pitch. And then Christian Vasquez, it's a 3-run walk-off homer. I mean, just an insane game. Oh, and in the middle, by the way.
Don't forget only the greatest play in the history of the world.
Yeah, the single best catch of the year, I would say, is Austin Jackson robbing Hanley Ramirez, flipping over the wall in classic cartoon fashion, flips over the wall at the center field triangle to rob Hanley Ramirez of a home run. I hope everyone has seen that catch. If you didn't see that catch, go watch that catch online. It's on MLB.com or something, because it's really insane.
There's a long fly ball, deep center field. Jackson's back. He leaps. He made an unbelievable catch. He flipped into the bullpen. Did he hang on?
He sure did.
What a play by Austin Jackson. That just might be the play of the year.
It's insane. It's insane and would have really led to an excellent you make the call on it being a home run.
Although
you knew right away as in watching that game, I assume you turned to your son and said, that's an out. Like you probably were able to use a little father-son baseball. It was a moment. I think it was a moment, wasn't it?
Well, here's the thing. So I was actually confused at the moment that it happened. I couldn't remember the actual wording of the rule. whether a fielder is allowed to leave the field of play while making an out. And I splurged and got us amazing seats on StubHub, and we were sitting right by the Red Sox dugout, the first base dugout. And even though it was far away, I knew he had caught the ball. It was instantly obvious that Austin Jackson had caught that ball. But then he completely flipped over the fence and landed in the bullpen. And I couldn't remember in that moment whether you are allowed to completely leave the field of play while making an out. And I thought there was some difference between a ball in foul territory and fair territory, but I wasn't sure about that either. So I wasn't 100% sure that it was an out, even though he clearly caught the ball. But the way that the umps were reacting, it was very clear that if he had caught the ball, it was an out.
Right.
Because they didn't seem to care that he had flipped over the fence. And so then after another third of a second, I was like, okay, well, if that were the rule, then it was very clear. The one thing that was clear from what had happened was that he fell over the wall. Yeah. So, but it was an incredible game. And I realized when, after Christian Vasquez, light hitting catcher Christian Vasquez, hit a 3-run homer to win the game, I believe, I could be crazy, but I think in my entire life, I believe that is the first walk-off win I have ever seen live.
Wow.
Now, I don't know. There might have been a game, you know, when I was 11 or something that I just forgot about. But I was searching. I searched desperately through my memory banks. And I think in any stadium, anywhere, in all of the now probably hundreds of baseball games I've seen live, I do not believe I have seen a ninth inning or later walk-off win. Is that possible? Am I crazy?
You know, they don't happen that often. They really don't. I mean, they happen often enough if you cross, you know, all throughout baseball, but per team, they don't happen very often. It is very possible that that was certainly, I would imagine without question, it's the first walk-off homer you've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, that there's no, because you would remember that.
Like, I would certainly have remembered that, yes.
Right.
I have a vague memory. I've been to whatever it's called now, AT&T Park. What's it called in San Francisco?
AT&T Park. AT&T Park.
I've been there, I'd say, probably four times in my life. It's a wonderful stadium. Love it to death. And I feel like I went there in 2003 and 2004. And I think that I have a vague memory of Jason Schmidt pitching in a game,
just a vague memory of Jason Schmidt.
Yes, who at the time was very good. Like,
sure.
And I feel like it's possible that I feel like I remember Jason Schmidt pitching and the Giants maybe getting a walk-off win. But I don't know if those two things happen in the same game, and I'm 100% sure I saw Jason Schmidt pitch, but I'm not 100% sure that I saw a walk-off win, and I'm definitely not sure that it happened in the game where Jason Schmidt pitched. So there you go. If any internet detectives want to figure out if the Giants ever won a game around 2003 or 2004, ever won in a walk-off fashion when Jason Schmidt started, maybe we can put puzzle together.
You might have been at that game. But in any case, it would not have meant as much as your team winning an amazing game. Here's the thing that I'm going to say it's amazing, and we're going to move on from here. But did your son at any point, because that was a long game, did your son at any point or your family at any point kind of say, hey, ready to go home? That's awesome.
No, my son is furious when we leave Dodger games early.
He's right.
He is. Of course he is. However, when you're leaving a Red Sox game early to just hop on the T at Kenmore and take the subway home, that's very different from leaving a Dodger game early, where if you don't leave early, you are sitting in traffic. Just to get out of the stadium, you're sitting in 45 minutes or an hour of traffic. So, yeah, I mean, it is a real bummer in L.A. Kenley Jansen's one of his favorite players, and he's rarely, if ever, seen Kenley Jansen pitch, even in a year where they're, 47 games over 500, because we always leave after the bottom of the eighth. It's just you just have to. And I know I'm a purist, and I hate leaving early, but you just have no choice. And so in Boston, you know, he's on LA time, so the game's going until 10:30 or 11. It doesn't matter. It's,
right.
It's,
that's right.
His little body at 7:30. So there was no question about leaving early. And in general, you know, he would never, if that game had gone 20 innings, he wouldn't have wanted to leave early. So
awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. I you know, envy that. You know, when I go with my kids, and they're not huge baseball fans, and but they like being there and like going, yeah, six innings. They're like, yeah, all right, that's a lot of baseball. I've seen a lot of baseball. That's how they are. You know, which is fine. I mean, that's just the way it are. I'm just very happy that you were able to like have that game with your son, and at no point was it even a consideration leaving the game. I think that's.
No.
I think that's awesome.
Now, before we move on, though, we're going to play a little game in this segment and also in the next segment that's called Sure Family Trivia or something. I don't know what it's called. But
Sure Family Trivia.
I'm gonna tell you the jerseys that my son has for each of the teams of the games that we went to, and then you're going to guess which jersey or shirt, rather, he got at the gift shop. Okay, so for the Red Sox, he owns a Mookie Betts T-shirt that says Mookie on it instead of Betts, which is great.
He owns a
Xander Bogaerts jersey, and he owns a Jackie Bradley Jr. jersey. So those are the three that he owned.
Okay,
and he bought. Well, I got him one more. Mookie T-shirt. Bogaerts jersey and Bradley jersey. Guess which a piece of apparel of a player he got this time.
That was not of those. So it's not one of those three.
I'm not saying it's not one of those three. I'm saying those are the three he owned. Okay. Oh, he already owned those three, and then I got him another jersey. What jersey did he pick?
Okay. So it's another jersey, Red Sox.
Right.
I'm gonna guess. Because the idea of all trivia is to guess the most obvious answer that is never right, I'm going to guess Chris Sale.
Good guess. He got another Mookie Betts jersey.
You know what? I think you ought to have a whole closet of Mookie Betts jerseys.
By the way, I could not have been happier. Like, when he was like, because he has a T-shirt. He has like the crummy, you know, $12 T-shirt. But he wants the jersey, the official jersey. And I thought he was interested in Devers. Like, he wanted a Devers jersey.
Sure,
But we were there so early in Devers' call-up, they hadn't made them yet. Or at least they were not available in the store we went to.
So
he would have gotten a Devers jersey, but absent that, he got the Mookie Betts jersey. So now he has Betts, Bradley, and Bogaerts jerseys. And he also was mildly interested in Benintendi. But no, he went full Mookie, which is great because I believe it should be, if it were up to me, I think it should be a federal law that all humans in America should have one Mookie Betts jersey.
I would agree with that. I would totally agree with that. You should have, and it should say Mookie on the back.
Yeah, I believe it should say Mookie, but I'd be willing to allow you to have one that just says Betts. But I think the world would be better off if everyone owned one Mookie Betts jersey.
I don't think there's any question about that. No. I think in every closet in America, there should be one Mookie Betts jersey and one Jose Altuve jersey. And then,
by the way, he has a Jose Altuve jersey.
Of course he does. How could he not?
Yeah, we went. I have relatives in Houston too. We went to an Astros game a couple years ago in Altuve's second year, I think. And I was like, listen. And at the time, it was his first year playing youth baseball, and he was playing second base. And I was like, listen, buddy, you need to know about this guy. And this guy's important. And I got him an Altuve jersey. It's the best. I love it. It's wonderful.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. Before we go on, let me go ahead and thank our sponsor, Volvo. I'm sure people know this. Since we've talked about this before, Midsommar sales event still going on. You can get up to $4,500 off on select Volvo vehicles. Enjoy standard features like keyless entry, rear park assist camera, navigation system, and more. But hurry, summer doesn't last forever. Take advantage of this limited time offer today. Visit your local Volvo dealer for details. Offer does exclude all V90, XC90 Momentum, and XC90 Excellence. Standard features vary by model. See your dealer for details. Thank you, Volvo. There you go. just, did you see how straight and professional that was?
That was so professional.
I know. I feel like I'm a pro at this Volvo read.
It might be weird for a man in his 40s to say this to another man in his 40s, but I'm really proud of you.
Thank you. All right. Speaking of we're not done with the Schur family vacation because
no.
The coolest part of the Schur family, not that seeing the game of the year is not cool, but the coolest part of the Schur family vacation is that Michael Schur finally saw a game at Wrigley Field.
That's right.
That's so awesome. All right. Give us the full report.
So, God, I mean, I'm 41 years old. I should have been to Wrigley by now. And I really wanted to get there last year because I actually predicted, and I believe you did too, I believed the Cubs were going to win the World Series last year.
Yep.
And I really wanted to see the Cubs in their home stadium for the first time the year that I believed they were going to win the World Series. Now, this is the thing that I like to do. I like to go see teams of destiny in their home stadiums the year of their destiny. I went to see a Warriors game a couple of years ago when they were playing out of their minds in the 73-9 season. Of course, they didn't win that year, but still, 73-9. I like to try to do this. So I really wanted to go last year, and it just didn't work out. It is crazy, by the way, that I'm as big a baseball fan as I am, and I've never been to Wrigley.
It is crazy.
So it's totally insane, and I've had some near misses. When we were shooting Parks and Recreation, we shot in Chicago in our final year, and Chris Pratt was asked to throw out the first pitch at Wrigley. And so the crew that was there in Chicago shooting went to Wrigley and like went on the field, and he threw out the first pitch, and I couldn't go because I had other responsibilities.
No.
Listen, man, you have to believe me. If I could have gone, I would have gone. I just couldn't go. So I was starting to feel like somehow I was never going to get there. Then out of the blue, I get a letter in the mail from a man named Bob Vorwald, who works for WGN.
I know Bob, absolutely.
Right. So Bob Vorwald writes me this letter out of the blue and just says basically, hilariously, by the way, I love the podcast. Which is, of course, I assumed it was a prank.
Of course.
Some kind of phishing scam. I believe that was being taken. I was about to be taken for some money. But he basically said, he likes the podcast. He listens to it. And if I was ever in Chicago, he would love to show me around Wrigley Field. Now, when you are desperate to get to a place and then someone who works in that place writes you a letter unsolicited and says, hey, do you want me to show you around? then you say you figure out a way to make it work. So
the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. So my wife and I were already going to take our kids to Boston to meet our new cousin and the kid's new cousin. And we thought, well, we'd love to do one thing. We've been to Boston a bunch of times. We'd love to do one thing we haven't done yet with the kids. And so Chicago was an obvious second stop. So
sure. We
fly, we see the game of the year. We fly from Boston to Chicago, the Saturday day game, Nationals Cubs. We go, we meet Bob Vorwald, and he takes us onto the field before the game,
God. Take
pictures on the field as the Nationals are taking batting practice. Like Anthony Rendon is like driving balls into the bleachers. we're standing right behind him. Then we go sit in amazing seats behind home plate. Our friends Kate and Patrick and their two daughters were with them and were with us, and they sat a little. Bob also got us seats very kindly in the shade a little further back, so that my wife and daughter, who care less about baseball, I would say, than my son and I do, could just hang out and enjoy a nice day at the ballpark in the shade. The weather was great. It was 78 degrees and sunny. It was a perfect day for baseball. We saw a great game. We saw and Bob, by the way, took my son up. I'm so angry at my son because he's 9 years old and he has done so many things in his life that I am only now doing at 41 when I have a job, you know, and I have a money and a job. And he's such a little jerk that he's gotten all these amazing things. So Bob takes him and me up into the broadcast booth, and we sit and we listen to the game be called up in the broadcast booth. And by the way, I get to meet Jim DeShays, who's an announcer for the Cubs. The Cubs play-by-play or color guy. Sure. Now, side note to the side note, Jim Deshays factors into one of my favorite early childhood baseball stories, which is because my relatives live in Houston, I used to go to a bunch of Astros games every year, and there was a game when Nolan Ryan was supposed to pitch, and I begged my grandparents and uncle to take me to see Nolan Ryan pitch, and they did. And even in 1985 or 86 or whatever it was, he was still striking out 14 guys a game.
Right. Oh yeah.
And so they made a big deal out of this. And this was before you got something. Now you get something at every game, every single baseball game you go to in every stadium. It's the Alltel Pepsi poncho giveaway or whatever. Back then, if it was a giveaway day, it was like a special day.
Sure.
And they were giving away foam K's for Nolan Ryan's start because it's so that everyone could wave them around whenever he struck somebody out. I was so excited. They gave away a foam K. We sat in our seats, and out onto the mound in the top of the first inning came Jim Deshays. And it turned out that Ryan had had some knee stiffness or something and had been scratched from the start. And Jim Deshays was actually pitching. And I think he struck out one guy in 5 1/3. And then when he did, everyone kind of sadly waved the K.
The one K, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I've always loved that story. I remember it very fondly. I remember, Jim Deshays was a pretty good pitcher.
He was a good pitcher.
Yeah. So I got to tell Jim Deshays in person that story, and he had the best reaction, which is I said, then Ryan was scratched and you filled in. And he immediately laughed and said, oh, you must have been so disappointed. So my son, this little jerk, this little spoiled jerk, gets to go up in the booth, watch the game be called for an inning. Then he goes, and one of the truly wonderful things about Wrigley is the scoreboard in center field is still operated by this 80-year-old magnetic relay system. Now, I'm sure you know this. You know this system, right?
Of course.
They do.
Yeah.
So there's this incredible old box that from the 1930s, from when, by the way, the Bears still played at Wrigley. So there is a little button on this old box that says football, where you can push it, and then that will let you operate the football scores. But it's still the same old, beautiful old system. They've kept it, they've maintained it, they've fixed it up recently, and my little 9-year-old jerk, spoiled son got to actually push a button that cleared at the end of the inning, he pushed the button that cleared the, balls and strikes and outs off the board. And I got a video of it, and he just had a giant smile on his face. And it was just imagine waiting as long as I have waited to see Wrigley Field, and then not only getting to walk onto the field before the game, but being able to take your son up into the booth, see the game from the announcer's booth, have him operate the scoreboard. A million, billion, trillion thanks to Bob Vorwald for a truly magical day. Just amazing, just truly amazing. And that was the Sure family vacation. Essentially, we did a bunch of other stuff too. We hung out and spent time as a family, but who cares about that? We saw the 12-10 Indians Red Sox game, and then we saw and the Cubs won, so we got to sing Go Cubs Go at the end of the game. We saw Alex Avila hit a home run and Chris Bryant hit a double, and you got everything out of it that you could possibly have wanted. And it was a wonderful day. So thank you to Bob Vorwald, and thanks to everybody at WGN and at Wrigley, because it was a dream come true.
It's incredible. Incredible. Yeah. But now I have to ask you two questions because you can't get away with going to Wrigley and having that kind of magical performance without answering two very difficult questions. One is, so purely by stadium and experience, Wrigley Field or Fenway Park?
Oh, man. I mean, it's a little unfair, right? I've seen Fenway 194 times.
Of course.
I've seen Wrigley once.
Right.
And I have to say that if you asked me this question in 1993 and I had seen both places, I think I'd probably say Wrigley. But because Fenway used to be a dump, but
right.
Fenway now, the ownership group in Chicago and the baseball operations group are doing to Wrigley what they did to Fenway, which is
right.
They're basically expanding the stadium outward. They're trying to, they're buying up the real estate around it. They're trying to block off the streets after the game. They're trying to create a sort of like broad experience where you can go and sort of spend the whole day there. And there's certain aspects of it that are brand new this year. There's a little park out back where like a sort of green area with a bunch of, there's like a Starbucks and stuff like that, where you can go out, back out, and then back into the stadium during the game. So it was perfect because my daughter, who again doesn't care as much about baseball as my son does, she was totally game and eating Cracker Jacks and happy. And then she got restless. And so it was like, oh, we'll go to Starbucks and we'll get a, you know, a donut or something. And then they came back in and it's moving along. You can see like, there's so much under construction around Wrigley. It reminds me exactly of what Fenway was like in about 2003 or four, where the experience of Wrigley Field is now, you know, stretching for a couple blocks in every direction. But they're not where Fenway is now. And the, right. The Fenway experience now, I think, is better than the Wrigley experience. But, you know, in another 3 years, who knows? They're both wonderful. The fact that you can take the subway to them is great. It's crazy to think that, you know, in the world we live in now, Dodger Stadium is the third oldest MLB stadium.
It's insane. It's
truly insane. And what it really made me feel like is, especially like seeing the way that magnetic scoreboard system works and how dedicated the ownership group is and the people who work there are to maintaining these kind of old traditions. I just hope that Fenway and Wrigley are there forever. Like that's at this point, those are our only two links to what you would consider to be the past of baseball. When Dodger Stadium, which wasn't built until the late 50s, when that's the third oldest stadium, that's crazy. Like baseball is a really old game. And if we lose Fenway and Wrigley, we lose something kind of real the history of the game.
It's true. You know, when I went to England and was doing some Premier League stuff, they would take me everywhere I would go. They would say, yeah, this stadium is 125 years old. Like all stadiums there. I mean, obviously now they're building all sorts of new palaces for the higher end teams. But every city has this ancient stadium that they would never even consider like building over because it is so much more important to have that connection to the past and that connection to those, you know, those teams of the 20s and 30s and 10s. And we don't, you know, we feel that way about Wrigley and Fenway, maybe a little bit Dodger Stadium now, but we don't feel that way about baseball in general. We feel, you know, the teams, you know, everybody's saying team, you know, stadiums that are 15 years older already need to be torn down. So it's different. And I think you're right. I think that's part of what's special. I think going to a game at Fenway or Wrigley is every bit as great. Once you're in the ballpark and sitting in your seat and watching the game, it's as great or greater than it is at AT&T Park or Pittsburgh or any of the like new stadiums that are awesome. It's just the outside stuff. It's like, you know, it's walking up 12 ramps and dealing with really, really thin concourses and that kind of thing. All right, the second question is, and this deals with your incredibly spoiled son, 9 years old, gets to go to Wrigley Field, gets to go on the field, gets to do the scoreboard, gets to go up and hang out with Len Casper and Jim Deshays and all those guys up there. Is he going to become a Cubs fan? Is there a chance that the Cubs sneak in and steal that Dodger thing from him?
I don't believe so.
It's amazing. Yeah. If I was 9 and that happened, that's it. I'm a Cubs fan for life.
Well, yes, but here's the thing. Talking about my spoiled jerk son is before he ever went up into the booth at the Cubs game,
He did it at Dodger Stadium.
Well, he actually hasn't done that. He has not done that at Dodger Stadium. I'll tell you what he has done, which is the Dodgers have this camp that they run every summer and then again in December, and it's for their foundation. The money goes to the foundation, but it's just called Dodger Camp, and the kid and the, you know, the 500 kids, and they get to play games on the field at Dodger Stadium. So they divide the outfield in like four quadrants and they put bases down and the kids play real games. They're divided up by age group. And then they go into the dugouts, they pitch in the bullpen, they go down to the batting cages under the stadium. They sit in the dugouts and they get like, you know, they learn signs and stuff from real, like, you know, former Dodger coaches. And Chase Utley comes and like talks to them, answers questions for an hour, and they get autographs of, you know, he's got a Justin Turner autograph and a Nomar Garcia-Parra autograph. Yeah, so like, yes, for an ordinary child, of course he would become a Cubs fan. In fact, Bob Vorwald, who showed us around, told me that basically he came to the stadium when he was like 7 or 8 years old, saw Wrigley Field, and told his dad in the car on the way home, when I grew up, I'm going to work for the Cubs. Like, he just, of course, awesome. I'm a Red Sox fan because I went to Fenway when I was 6 or whatever and walked into that stadium. It was like you imprint like a baby duckling on the stadium that you see, and like that's the end of it. But my spoiled jerk 9-year-old son has had incredible experiences now in so many baseball stadiums that like it's like, ah, it's old hat. Now, I should note, by the way, he is not actually jaded. His mind is blown by all of this stuff. He's so awesome. Happy all the time. Yeah, so like awesome. He is not like whatever, I don't care, I'm operating the scoreboard. Like in the video, he's smiling a mile wide. He can't believe he's getting to do it, and he's still talking about it. And when we got home to Los Angeles, he fell asleep reading his Cubs yearbook and holding in his hand a real Major League Baseball that Bob gave him from the stadium. So yeah, I mean he is appreciative of how incredible it is. But this all leads me to whatever our new segment is called. What's it called? Sure Family Trivia. Sure, whatever.
Sure Family Trivia.
Sure. So now the question is, given everything that happened in the game, the starting pitching matchup, just so you know, give you some facts here. It was John Lackey and Edwin Jackson. Edwin Jackson, sadly, it was supposed to be Scherzer, but Scherzer strained his neck or hitting a home run or whatever weird thing happened. So Edwin Jackson was a spot starter. But, you know, we saw Bryce Harper hit a 4,000-foot home run. Oh, that was really cool. So, you know, and there, so Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, you know, they, who else? Alex Avila hit a home run. We saw Wade Davis close the game. That was fun. Given all of that, what jersey, when we went to the gift shop to commemorate the trip with a jersey, what jersey does my son pick?
Your son chose an Anthony Rendon jersey.
No, it was a Cubs. I'll give you one more guess. It was a Cubs.
It was a Cubs show. Oh, it was not a Nationals guy. Okay.
By the way, side note though, can you believe what a good year Anthony Rendon is having?
Oh my gosh! I mean, I really will say that is every so often I'll just pop on and he's leading the National League in WAR. Like what? Like
I can't. It's unbelievable. I mean, he was having a good year. Yeah, I knew it was like he was having a great year, but what actually like staring at his statistics is mind blowing. I mean, he's a legitimate MVP candidate.
I think right now he's got to be one of the three you consider for MVP. I mean, it's that good a year. All right. So wait a minute. So what Cubs jersey did he choose? All right. Again, playing the game as we should, based on what you would expect him to do. I'm going to say he took a Chris Bryant jersey.
Great guess. It's what I would have guessed.
Sure.
Just because Bryant won the MVP last year. No, he went Javier Baez.
You know what? Again, your son, one more time, showing great taste.
Great Javi taste. Baez. I got to say.
Who's more fun than Javier Baez? Who's more
made,
fun?
It made me super happy. And the first thing I did was call, because it was a perfect excuse to call up and then watch 3,000 times the moment from the World Baseball Classic when Yadier Molina throws out, is it Nelson Cruz? I think it's Nelson Cruz.
Nelson Cruz, I think.
And Javier Baez was celebrating.
Was it Cruz or Machado? I don't even remember.
I think it was Cruz. I don't remember. But Javier Baez points to Molina and celebrates the throw long before he has caught it and dropped the tag down. It's one of my favorite things that has ever happened in the history of baseball. And that Puerto Rico Dominican game was so fun. Every baseball game should be that fun. And I showed William that video, which he had seen before, but I showed it to him, and I was so proud that he made that choice.
Oh, it's Baez, such a good choice.
Great choice for a jersey.
It's such a good choice. I forgot Machado was the one that hit the would-be home run that Adam Jones stole.
That's right. That's right. So. Yeah.
What a great World Baseball Classic this was, by the way. I mean, I can't remember anything from almost any other World Baseball, but I have like several memories from this one. So
yeah, this all was right. This last one, it like finally hit the sweet spot that I think they've been trying to hit, which is like it's like the World Cup where the teams have identities and the competition is like really high and high level, and yeah, it was great.
It was great. All right, we are going to do I went to Twitter. Do you know about this thing, Twitter? Have you heard of this thing?
I've heard of it. I've never used it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, never used it before. And I asked people to give us questions for the podcast. So I'm going to go through, because some of these are I think, very, very interesting questions that I think we should answer. And then somewhere in the middle there, we need to have our Yankee Minute, because there is a Yankee question I want to ask you pretty directly. But let's go to some questions. Let's start with Sean's question, which I think is brilliant. Would you, and I guess this is to both of us, would you rather face one Aaron Judge-sized Jose Altuve or 10 Jose Altuve-sized Aaron Judges?
In what? In what kind of situation? In a wrestling match or what is he talking about?
I don't know. Obviously, he doesn't explain. I'm going to assume he means in a baseball game, I guess.
I think he means – I'm going to assume he means like in a dark alley.
I would say, just based on whatever meaning it is, you definitely would rather face the 10 Jose Altuve-sized Aaron Judges, right?
No, I mean, way. No, absolutely not. No,
oh, you'd wow. Rather,
no, 10 – 10. Look, Jose Altuve is almost as good a hitter as Aaron Judge at his size.
That's my point. One of him at Aaron Judge's size, way better than 10. If you shrunk Aaron Judge down, he would just be a little Aaron Judge. That would not be as good.
No, I'm saying that like the size doesn't matter. If you're talking about baseball,
yes,
the size doesn't matter. I don't think Jose Altuve gets that much. He can't get that much better if he's Aaron Judge's size. And Aaron Judge doesn't get that much worse if he's Jose Altuve's size, I don't think.
I think he does. I think it would affect him more. I think he'd be a little shrimpy Aaron Judge. That would not be as impressive.
But Jose Altuve is Jose Altuve's size, and he's jacked, and he hits 450-foot home runs.
That's true. Like,
I'm saying you'd always rather face one amazing player than 10 amazing players. I don't think Aaron Judge suddenly gets terrible if he's Jose Altuve's size.
I don't know.
That's a fallacy.
I don't know. Okay, but let me ask you this. Who is better? Who is likely to, as I go into the insanity of this question, who is more likely to lose some of their greatness? Altuve stretching him out to 6'7", 280, or Aaron Judge shrinking him down to 5'3", or 5'4", or whatever.
I guess Aaron Judge's, but there's 10 of him. Like, it's a whole team and a DH. I mean, I feel like if you're talking about baseball, I think obviously you'd rather face one Jose Altuve. And if you're facing, if this is a dark alley situation, I think you still want one guy. I mean, you don't have a chance against 10 of anybody
in a dark alley. That's
so
true.
I'm gonna always pick the one guy. I mean, Jose Altuve stretched to Aaron Judge's size is a terrifying thought. And it's also, by the way, less fun, because the great thing about Jose Altuve is that he's Jose Altuve's size. And by the way, you know, Aaron Judge's first half, phenomenal first half. His second half, he's obviously cooled down a little bit, as you sort of figured he would.
You have to, yes.
But Jose Altuve is heated up. Like, he's – Jose Altuve
is insane. Insane.
It's insane. I don't understand. This Jose Altuve should be just – after the end of the baseball season, he should be put on a lazy Susan in the Smithsonian, and he should just slowly rotate, and all of America should go and be able to just stare at him and appreciate him, because he's the best.
I do like the Joe Sheehan line that he'll use occasionally. Why can't you make the whole plane out of Jose Altuve? I just think he's not just good. He's not just a great baseball player. He's like the essence of what like life is. He's just everything. He's just he's so good. All right, good question.
If an alien comes to Earth and says, "Explain to me the concept of pure joy." You just show him. You show him a video.
You show Jose Altuve. That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. All right. Good question, Sean. Flannel wants to know, how does Michael feel about potatoes?
Generally speaking, pretty bored by them.
Okay, bored. Bored in general by potatoes.
Never been like a big baked potato guy. I don't like any item that is only good if you soak it in oil, butter, salt, cheese, sour cream, like bacon. Like if you have to add 70 things to it to make it taste good, then it's not a good thing. I do love French fries, like all humans,
right?
Alive, but they're terrible. They'll literally murder you. The French fries are trying to murder you. Like that. If you don't understand this, you should. French fries are death sticks.
They're
like
death sticks.
They're the most delicious things in the world, but they're actively trying to assault you. So I try not to eat them, and I fail frequently. But I'm like, some people are sort of fetishistic about mashed potatoes or like crinkle
baked potatoes, what they want on them, and all that sort of thing. Yeah.
I it's not my thing, man. You know, you do you. Potato guys and gals, I'm not a big potato guy.
All right. I actually agree with you. Although
really,
yeah, I do. I of course love fries and I find them to be one of my terrible weaknesses.
Yeah.
But yeah, generally, like if somebody like. You know, you prepare them, you broil them, you cut them up, you mash them, none of it does anything for me. They're fine.
Yeah.
They're fine. All right. If Cal wants to know if they both retire this year, would Ichiro and Beltre be your and every right thinking person's favorite Hall of Fame class ever? I don't even need to ask you that. Yes, that's obvious.
Sorry, Ichiro and who?
Adrian Beltre. Oh. Yeah.
I mean, would anybody else be going in with them?
Does anybody else need to go in with them? I think that's it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the last class was pretty great. Pedro's class.
Yeah, Pedro's class.
We've got to talk about Pedro's class in this argument. I mean, Ichiro and Beltre is amazing, obviously.
Amazing.
And that will be – I'll be so happy on that day. But Pedro's – so what was Pedro's class? Was Pedro – Randy Johnson, right?
But did Pedro go in with Randy Johnson? Is that actually the same class?
Isn't it? That's, maybe I'm crazy.
No, that could be. It could be. I mean, look, all those guys went around the same time. Smoltz, Glavin, Maddox, Pedro, and they all went around the same time. So I'm trying to remember, and I'm going to look it up right now, if he actually went in with Randy Johnson, because that would be pretty awesome. I guess that, no matter who Pedro goes in with, though, that's a great class.
Pedro alone puts your class into the upper echelon of classes,
all right,
I would say.
Randy Johnson, Pedro, yep, and then John Smoltz and Craig Biggio, which I got to say neither of those add that much. I mean, they're both great players, and I don't
know. Great players, but they're not like, it's not in the same categories. Not.
So I think you're asking if Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez equals Ichiro and Adrian Beltre. You know, I guess it depends if you like pitching or hitting more, but
it's pretty close. I mean, it's pretty close.
Ichiro,
I would say,
just so awesome. And
Ichiro and Beltre is wonderful. Like that is
joy.
Truly wonderful.
Pure joy. That is I was at the George Brett, Nolan Ryan, Robin Yount class, which I thought was great.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I mean, there've been some really good classes, but boy, yeah. Beltre, by the way, neither one is going to retire, so the question is moot, because I don't think either one is going to retire. I think Beltre, why would Beltre retire? He's playing great. I mean, like, you know. And Ichiro, I think, might play until he's 80. I don't think Ichiro wants to stop ever playing baseball, and I think he'll keep getting a job. I don't know, but
at some point we're going to look up, and Ichiro will be 53 years old, and he'll have 7,000 hits. And we'll realize that he hasn't hit the ball out of the infield since 2009.
Yeah. That guy is still beating out infield hits. And he's like 44 now or whatever. He's ancient. You know, it's awesome. Awesome. All right. John wants to know, do you think the NBA should widen the court a few inches? I think that's a question we should be asked, by the way.
Yeah,
I don't think anybody really can understand this as well as we can.
We're the people that I think everyone is turning to
about the geometry of basketball, right? I mean, that's sort of our expertise.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't have any reason to widen the court. Why are we widening the court? In order to make it go a little, so we get a little more, some open lanes, a little more fast break basketball, maybe? Is that the idea?
I have heard the argument that widening the court significantly would lead to a more interesting game because the players are so enormous that there's a sort of sameness to the way that players move around the court.
Oh, maybe.
And stuff like that. And now that there's no, like, it used to be obviously that the geometry of the offense was set up to like favor low post play, which meant that the players moved in a certain way and blah, 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 blah. But now it's all, they're just bombing from three. And so I know there are some people, I'm not saying I subscribe to this, but I know that there are some people who think that widening the court, not a couple inches, but significantly, would lead to a kind of a different feeling or a better feeling. I don't know. I don't even know what the argument is, but I have heard people make that argument. I don't feel like there's anything wrong with basketball.
I
get the idea. Like, when you see a basketball game live, you do realize, like, it doesn't seem like this ought to be the case, but there's no room on the court. No. There's like they're so gigantic and their wingspans are so enormous that there's literally there's no place to go. But I think that that's good. I think it's like it's like a little pressure cooker. And when you get a guy like Chris Paul or James Harden or someone like that who figures out a way to slither through the defense and like put up a crazy like switch hands midair and spin the ball off the backboard.
Oh, Kyrie, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're doing that because they have to, because they're forced to, and obstacles, generally speaking, are good for creativity. And I think that that's what you see in basketball. And if you significantly widen the court, even a couple inches, I think you would start to see less. People would just be taking even more threes than they are now.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. And I think the other side of having it the way it is now is, you know, they run such extraordinary, you know, plays and pick plays and whatever. I mean, you get guys open in this atmosphere. You know, if you add a few inches to the court, is it easier to get open for these shots? I don't think we need that. I think the balance is pretty good now. So there you go. We've solved that. By the way, before we go on to our next question, I should point out we have, you know, how long did it take us to get microphones for this?
We did 11,000 podcasts before
we did 11,000.
Yeah, it was our 11,000th and first podcast. We decided to get microphones to talk into.
We decided to get microphones, and now we've done several thousand podcasts since then, and we have a producer. We have like an actual producer. We actually had somebody help us with production before, and she was great. But we have an actual full-fledged producer who like sends us notes during the podcast, which is mind-blowing. And he just sent us one for me to do a read. So should I do this? I mean, are we going to listen to our producer, TJ?
It would seem sort of rude to finally get a professional producer involved in this enterprise, have that producer send us a request to do something and then ignore it.
I agree. Right? I agree. I think it's not the way you do things.
It's just rude. I would say it's rude. So let's not be rude. Go ahead and do the read.
All right, I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it just as straight as I can. We want to take a moment to tell you about the Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section. I know those guys. They're the Cespedes BBQ guys, Cut 4. You love those guys?
They're the best. Cespedes. Love them.
They're the best, yeah. It focuses on the lighter side of baseball. We really think you'll enjoy it. It'll make you laugh, and you might even learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food. Last week's episode shed some light on the person behind MLB's many official social media accounts and left no stone unturned in Astros mascot Orbit's bitter feud with Ray starter Chris Archer. If that sounds like something you're into, search Cut Forecast, Cut, C-U-T, the number 4, Cast, in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. All right, a few more questions. Gareth wants to know, how much better would the NFL, NBA, and MLB drafts be if they were replaced by a sorting hat? These are the questions that our people think we have answers to.
That's a good question, though.
It is a good question.
Like in other words, okay, Andrew Benintendi,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Andrew Benintendi goes to Arkansas, and he's a top prospect. He wins the Golden Boot Award, or whatever it's called, the Golden Spikes Award. He's the best player in the country.
and Boot Award.
It's what they give in the World Cup when for the guy who scores most goals. It's not outrageous that I said Golden Boot instead of Golden Spikes.
All right.
But so instead of being like, okay, well, you're going to be go one, two, or three or whatever in the draft, instead he goes and he sits down and he gets interviewed by a bunch of people. And then it's basically like there's a kind of like oracle of some kind who says, based on your... based on like where you're from and your personality and
this
your
team you
character and your and yeah you are a Philadelphia Philly.
Yes.
Like if you had that somehow, like in other words, but the sorting hat in Harry Potter it's sort of based on your personality, your character, soul. So I think you would have to say that the baseball sorting hat, for example, would have to take into account things like and the, obviously the houses in Harry Potter have different like sort of characteristics. They have different sort of things that they stand for, you know, honesty, integrity, whatever, you know, success, whatever. So you'd have to say like the sorting hat in baseball would say like, here's what Philadelphia is. Here's what Tampa Bay is.
Which I think is very true. I think that is true. Yeah. I think different teams do have different, they're like houses in Harry Potter. I love it. I think actually the more I think about it, the more, especially for the NFL, I think you bring all of the players to New York or Chicago or wherever the thing is going to be. You bring them up one by one. You put a sorting hat on them.
Yeah.
And then the sorting hat does like a little song about them and then tells them, you are a Detroit Lion. I think that would be awesome.
That sounds great. Like if you're a 5'9" white wide receiver, you're pretty sure you know – you know what team you're going to.
That'd be so great. You just,
that guy who played for Clemson, right? That whatever that wideout was. That guy knows. Yeah, big surprise. When it's like the way that all the Weasleys end up in Gryffindor, right? It's like all of the 5'9" white wide receivers. They all end up all the Rutgers defensive backs that end up in New England.
I think it would be great. You have like a guy going up there. He's kind of mopey looking, and he puts it on, and he's like, and he's just like saying, "No, not Cleveland, not Cleveland, not Cleveland." Right? He's just doing.
Yeah.
You know, and the sorting cat's like, "But you would do very well in Cleveland." You know, I mean, just I think this is the greatest idea. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant idea. We're all for it. We're all for it. All right. Is Mike Trout, Sam wants to know, is Mike Trout already a Hall of Fame lock? I put a little something on Twitter yesterday, sort of based on your thing, because you had put you put a little Mike Trout thing up, and I did based on your thing. I said if Mike Trout retired tomorrow, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. And then here's and I don't look, no, I'm an idiot. I think everybody knows that. That's fine. I'm not a smart person. I get it. I got a bunch of people emailing me about how, he wouldn't be eligible because he hasn't played 10 years. I don't know a lot about a lot, but I pretty much know everything about the Baseball Hall of Fame. Like, I know that. Like, I just felt like that was one thing that, like, people didn't have to inform me about the, like, Baseball Hall of Fame. Like, I write 10 billion words a year about, I know the rules of the Baseball Hall of Fame. I don't care. I still say, he retired tomorrow. He's in the Baseball Hall of Fame. They make an exception to the rule. He's been that good for that long, right? That's it. He's a Hall of Famer today, in my view.
Yes, they would change the. They would either change the rule or they would make an exception. If some, God forbid, some horrible thing happened, he blew out his knee or whatever. I know, I don't. I feel bad even like saying this out loud
because it would be
a national tragedy if we lost the rest of Mike Trout's career. But yes, of course, if something terrible happened, then they would change the rule because he is a Hall of Famer. The thing that I put on Twitter was I just went to the Baseball Reference page and. Clipped, you know, they do a thing of a section called Hall of Fame statistics. So they have a bunch of different ways to sort of judge how likely a player is to be a Hall of Famer. There's a thing called black ink, a thing called gray ink. There's a Hall of Fame monitor. There's the Jaws system.
Bill James did most of those. The Jaws is obviously Jay Jaffe, but the others are Bill James.
And basically right now at this moment, he's essentially a Hall of Famer in the Hall of Fame monitor. A likely Hall of Famer is a score of 100. He has 100. the gray ink or the black ink rather, the average Hall of Famer is a 27. He's a 25. Like he's basically already a Hall of Famer. But you know, the Mike Trout's baseball reference page is the closest baseball gets to the concept of pornography. Like if you go, because it has a, you know, Baseball Reference is a wonderful site. It's the best site on the internet, and it breaks. They have a million different statistics, and it tells you how the player finished in the league. You know, if he finished in the top 10 in any category, and the number of things that Mike Trout has been not just top 10 in, but first in every year of his existence is shocking. Do you know that he has been first in the league in runs scored 4 out of the 5 years he has played
it's
in Major
insane.
League Baseball?
It's insane.
And that's his team isn't that good. And he's still first in the league. He scores all the runs. He's been first in slugging percentage. He was first in slugging percentage in 2015. He's the active leader in slugging percentage. He has been first in offensive war every year he has played in the league.
Every single
year he has been in the league. He's been first in war. He's been first in position player war. He's won the MVP or finished second in the MVP voting every year he has been in the league. It's shocking. It's deeply shocking to see what this guy has done since 2012, basically. And there's no way if his career ended tomorrow that they would not figure out a way to enshrine him in Cooperstown.
That's exactly
right.
That's exactly right. You know, I actually thought you were going to point out, and I think this is true, if you look at his, if you go to Baseball Reference, which I would recommend, hey, people follow along. Just do this. Go right to Baseball Reference, usually on a computer, and you go to your standard batting. It bolds out the years that he led the league. Not even top 10. It bolds it out. And you look at it, and it almost looks like some World War II code. Like there's some, because there's so many numbers bolded out in the middle of all of this that you almost like could spell something like secretive in his, you know, which is basically, this is his baseball DNA right here. It's so awesome. He's so great. You know, people that are, you know, saying, hey, you know, you look at Albert Pujols at the same age. Albert Pujols is a great player. Albert Pujols is going to the Hall of Fame. It's still not the same because the position this guy plays, because of the base stealing, you know, the what this threat he is on the bases. The guy led the league in stolen bases 1 year. I mean, incredible. Just, he's the best player of our time. He's the best player of our time. Obviously, you got the Barry Bonds craziness, and it's hard to you know, I mean, you and I have our own feelings about Barry Bonds. Other people have their own feelings. Bonds aside, he's the best player of my lifetime, I think.
There's no other argument.
I mean, the
saddest thing, the saddest thing about him getting injured this year is he was off to his best start ever.
Yes.
Hopefully, you know, he just turned 26. That means his 26 year, 27 and 28 year seasons are still ahead of him, which is insane to think about. And there's no reason to think that they'll be any worse than they've been so far. But his slugging percentage this year is .716. It's absurd what he's done. And the fact that we're going to have lost this year Kershaw for 6 weeks or more in what was one of his best years, and Trout for a long time, 6 weeks or more in one of his best seasons. That's a real shame. That's like that's 12 weeks of the two best players of their positions, of their eras. And it's a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bit of a bummer. Although, you know what, at the end of the year, he's going to end up with numbers. You're going to go, oh, he missed games. I mean, he's like the guy still has, he's hitting .346 with 23 homers, you know, in 68 games. I mean, he's incredible. Just incredible.
Well, he's at almost 5 WAR right now. And that's still top 10. He hasn't played. He didn't play for like 6 or 7. He's got the same WAR basically as Joey Votto and Carlos Correa, and he missed a month and a half. It's insane. It's a counting stat. It's the more you play, the more WAR you get, and he still is in the top 10 in the league, even though he's only played in 68 out of whatever it is, 95 or 100 games.
It's nuts. He's just nuts.
Struck out looking his first time. This was ripped down the left field line for an extra base hit. Trout at career hit number 1,000 and does it in grand fashion with a 17th double. of the season.
Two more questions, both from Jeff. Jeff sent us two questions. I like both of them. One, these Dodgers, how many wins will they end up at?
Well, you want to set an,
I'm going to go
set an over under, and I'll take the over or the under.
Well, okay. So what would I'm trying to think of what a good over under would be, because if I said 110, I think you're going over. I think. Am I right? I mean, if I said 110, are you going to go over?
I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do.
The reason I'm saying that is I want to set it as high as possible, where you have to think about it. So is 110? Like, do you have to think about it at 110, or just tell me that? Do you
have to think about it?
Okay, you do. All right, let's say 110 then.
I think I'll take the under.
Oh.
Simply because of statistics and math, A.
Yes.
And B, because they're running away with their division. They've
right.
got whatever it is.
It won't matter.
15 game lead. It won't matter. They're gonna wrap up their division in early September probably. And you know, this team's bugaboo. When in recent years they've won four straight NL West titles, but their bugaboo in the playoffs has been their bullpen and their pitching in general. And I feel like they're going to just rest a bunch of guys. They'll bring up a bunch of guys from AAA. They'll throw those guys with some innings. They're going to take the foot off the gas because they can. Now that they're such good hitters that it's possible that they just are the Mariners from 2001 or whenever that was, and they just are going to cruise to victory no matter what they do. Or the 98 Yankees, where, like, again, they wrap up their division early, but they just keep winning just because they're so good. But
right.
I believe that based on their recent playoff failures, early round playoff failures, even when they advanced, they've lost to teams they should have beaten maybe. My guess is that they're just going to really take their foot off the gas and really rest a bunch of guys. You'll see a bunch of September call-ups starting in games in mid-September, and they're 47 games over 500 right now. I mean, it's not like they don't need to win. So, you know, I feel like the Warriors, part of the reason the Warriors set the record, honestly, is because the Spurs were pressing them for the one seed until like the last 2 weeks of the season. The Spurs won 67 games that year or whatever. So they don't have anybody like that, even within their own, you know, the other two wildcard teams are coming, probably going to come from their own division.
Yeah, sure they are.
Even then, they've got a 15 game lead. So I think I take the under just because I feel like they just chill out and they coast to 107 or 108 wins and that's the end.
It's a good bet. It's a good bet. I think I take the over. And I'll tell you why. You actually just said it. I think they're that good. I don't think they'll try for the record. I think that the Warriors did at the end. I think they wanted it. I mean, yes, they were getting pressed and all of that, but I think they wanted the record. I think they wanted history. I kind of get a little bit of that feel from this Dodgers team. It's just been so long since they've won a World Series, and I just think that they want this pretty badly. But also, they're so young, and you know, I mean, I guess you could argue that because they're young, they'll fade a little bit in September. Maybe they will. It just feels to me like they're not even. I mean, they're trying, but they're not playing with like immense intensity now, and they're still like winning games like 8-0 like every other night. It feels like so. I just think they're good enough that they're. I think they're going to, you know, I think they'll win 112, 113, somewhere in that range. And I think they might go into the last week with a chance at the record, and I think they might go for it. I mean, I don't.
Wow.
Yeah, I maybe I'm wrong. In fact, there's a pretty good chance I'm wrong. But I just have this feeling that they're going to go for it. All right, Jonathan's other question is, and I think this is really the question of our time. This is Jeff's question. What article of clothing is the biggest pain to buy? Jeans, sunglasses. Those are his two options. I think we can choose our own. I don't feel like we have to stick with his. What is the article of clothing that is the biggest pain to buy?
I'm going to stick with his, as if jeans versus sunglasses is like an age-old argument that we as a nation have been debating for thousands of years. It's like chocolate or vanilla, you know?
Jeans.
The old jeans versus sunglasses debate. You know, there's two kinds of people in the world.
Jeans
there's people.
People
who think that there's jeans are the biggest pain to buy, and there's people who think sunglasses are. That's what my granddaddy told me. That's what I'll someday tell my grandkids. You're either a gene. We're genes people, son. We believe this family. We believe the genes are the biggest pain in the butt to buy.
There's intermarriage. We're like, ah, she's more of a sunglasses person, son. I'm not sure that's going to work out for you.
Yeah, there's like the speeches at those weddings are like, when I first met Cheryl and I found out she thought that sunglasses were the biggest pain to buy, I thought, well, there's no future here, but, you know, she's won my respect.
I've grown to love her despite that opinion. All right, so what is it, jeans or sunglasses?
I mean, I don't personally find either of them that hard to buy. The sunglasses are like the easiest. I mean,
yeah,
why is sunglasses getting dragged into this?
I don't know.
You can go to Rite Aid and buy a pair of sunglasses for $5 in 3 seconds. Like, and if you want nice ones, there's a million places to buy decent sunglasses for $40 or whatever. And sunglasses to me are one of the easiest things to buy. Like, sunglasses and chewing gum are roughly the same amount of difficult to buy. So I'll go with jeans over sunglasses.
Yeah, I got to go with jeans. I got to go. And by the way, I don't take any longer to buy jeans because I don't try on clothes unless I absolutely have to in the store. So I know my jean size. I would just buy the jeans and same thing. And all sunglasses, they all fit. Right? It's like a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. Like, that is weird that sunglasses would be the one that would come out from him.
Yes, this is a terrible question. I'm glad we devoted 4 minutes of this podcast to it.
One last meaningless thing to end this meaningless thing. TJ will put music in here, make it really nice. It'll be great.
It's one last meaningless thing. Talk about sports and we draft things we know, like how beaches are terrible places to go. No hot fruit for Michael, nor Diet Coke for Joe. The podcast, whoa, it's one last whoa.
Do you want to go first? Why don't you go first?
On our family vacation, I asked this woman who I work with at The Good Place, the TV show I work for, to if she could take care of my cats while I was away.
Okay.
She very nicely did that. She came over and took care of, fed our cats. And well, our cats are 13 years old. They're terrible cats. They're awful, awful cats. One of them lives outside. We never see him. He comes in, eats 12 cans of food, and then leaves again. And he refuses to be petted. He meows constantly. We've tried to take him to the vet to see if there's something wrong with him, but we literally can't catch him. Like, it's like if you approach him, if you get within, like, I don't know, 8 feet of him, he darts away. So but somehow, by the way, he lives outside. We never see him. He's like the healthiest animal. I mean, his coat is perfectly coiffed and shiny. And we have raccoons and possums and stuff in our neighborhood. And he's constantly beating them up, I think, and like scary. He's an enormous cat. They're huge, enormous cats. And then the other one lives inside, and she's nicer, but she's also in her own way terrible. The question I had when I got home was, you know, we were gone for a week, and a person, a human being that they've never seen before, came and like fed them and you know, made sure they were okay and stuff. My question was, did they notice? Did they even notice we weren't here? Like, do they notice? Do they care? And, you know, I'm sure the one who lives outside didn't. Because he doesn't know who we are. Like,
right.
he hasn't spent more than 8 seconds with us in his entire 13-year existence. But I wondered, like, the one who lives inside, I wondered, does she even know? Does she miss us? Does she know we were gone? And so I talked to a woman who took care of them while we were gone, and I said, everything goes smoothly. And she was like, oh yeah. And she said, the multicolored one, that's the one that lives inside, like, the multicolored one even like came and like sat on my lap and like let me pet her and stuff. And then I was like, well, now I have my answer. They may have noticed, but they sure didn't care.
They didn't care.
Absolutely. They could not have cared less. We are nothing to them. They do not care about it. Like, who the humans are who live in the house. They will let anybody, she will let anybody pet her, feed her, doesn't matter. if we packed up and left tomorrow and a new family moved in, they absolutely would not care. So there's your answer.
That's what you get for having cats in the first place. I'm sorry.
Oh, believe me, man, I know. I mean, it's one of the great like regrets of my wife's and mine is that when I first moved out here in 2004, we went to this adoption fair and we adopted these two cats. And I mean, the amount of the headache, just constant headache that these two cats have given us. When we moved in 2007 during the World Series, the Red Sox Rockies World Series, we moved houses and we got everything. The house that we moved out of had this chimney, and the cat who lives outside, when he was inside, if anybody came over to the house, including, by the way, if we just like walked into the room he was in, he would run and jump up into the chimney. There was like a little sort of platform inside it, and he would just hide in the chimney forever, like for hours. And so when we moved out of that house, he went and hid up there because of all the commotion, and he didn't come down, and you couldn't get him down. Like he was in a place where there was no way to get him down. And so the night that we moved into our new home, when we're supposed to be like, you know, pouring a glass of wine and cheersing and like, here's the beginning of our new, you know, a new phase of our lives, I sat in on the floor in an empty house next to, or like 8 to 10 feet away from a can of cat food while the World Series, my team was in the World Series. It was like game three of the World Series. I could not watch it. And I sat on the floor motionless for like an hour and a half waiting for my stupid cat to jump down off the ledge and start eating the food that I had put out for him, just so I could then jump on him and grab him and take him back to our home.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, he's a terrible animal.
All right. Well, we'll have the cat-dog conversation another time. My one last meaningless thing to end this meaningless thing is, so you know how now – and I mean, it's now we've been doing this for about 2 or 3 years now, I suppose, maybe even longer. You got the chip on the credit card, right? So you don't do the slide thing. I mean, some places you do, but most places now you don't slide the credit card anymore. You just stick it in the slot, right? And it reads the chip. And I guess this is more secure, I suppose. I don't understand why it is, but I guess it's more secure or whatever. Could they make that sound to let you know to take your credit card out of the thing? Could they make that a little less annoying? Is that possible for them to take that? That is the most horrifying sound. And I've now heard it, you know, and it's the same everywhere. It's not like you go to one store or another store and they've got like a, oh yeah, here we got a nice pleasant sound. No, it's always that like, meh, 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 meh. That I hate it. I hate that. It is added noise pollution to our lives that I don't need. I don't want this stupid thing to scare me every time I just want to buy something. I hate it. We got to do away with that.
I don't disagree. I have been to some places where they don't make that sound.
Really?
Where there's no, yeah, where they somehow turned it off.
Okay, well, maybe, but I mean, can you not be just like a pleasant little bell or something, or just something like, just, I mean, I get it. You don't want to leave your credit card there, forget it, whatever, but that's the sound they came up with? Really?
It's basically the sound of the, like if someone walks out of a store, like a Rite Aid or something, with an item that they didn't pay for.
Right,
it's that same, or like a J. Crew, right? It's that same sound. It's like, meh, 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 right?
It is. Yeah. It is. It's like they're, and you know, you get that sound sometimes by mistake, right? They'll forget to take off whatever they needed to take off of your clothes or whatever. And so you get that sound. And then you feel like a thief. Now, every time you pay with a credit card, you feel like a thief. I hate it.
Yeah. I will only say that I have been to places where the sound does not happen.
Well, that tells me that it's possible.
That there's a way to turn it off.
There's a way to turn it off. So I beseech all store owners who are listening to this podcast and might be moved by my appeal, turn it off. Just turn that thing off.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the stores where they've turned it off, the people behind the counter say, you can go ahead and take your card out now, or something. They'll remind you. And then it works. It's a good system. It works perfectly well.
It's a very good system. Let's go with that. Let's just go with that. All right, and there you go. And we've done another podcast. I assume TJ is just amazed at what he has gotten into with doing this thing. He's listening. TJ just texted to say that he's back and he's listening. Isn't that cool?
So just to be clear. Okay, so this we're now like an hour 10 into this thing or whatever, which is obviously way too long. But way just to be clear what happened. Before we started, TJ came on and said like, okay, listen, guys, I have to do another show. After like 20 minutes into your show, I have to go produce another show. So I'm going to start the recording, push mute, and go do that other show. And then I'll get back when after you're done, just sign off, and then I'll take care of everything. So what's happened is we did the show for 20 minutes. He left, did a completely other show, and now better came show. Back, and we're still just talking. We're talking about terrible cats and credit card noises that we hate.
It's sad.
That's what's happened.
It's very, very sad. Really,
it's very sad.
But here's the great thing. TJ's going to produce it and make it into something glorious. Don't you think? Don't you trust TJ? No.
I trust TJ. I just don't trust us.
No, we've given him nothing. We've given him nothing to work with here. So, well, we'll do it again soon, Michael. As always, thank you.
Thanks for having me.